Bhikkhus, there are these five bases of liberation by means of which, if a bhikkhu dwells heedful, ardent, and resolute, his unliberated mind is liberated, his undestroyed taints are utterly destroyed, and he reaches the as yet unreached, unsurpassed security from bondage. What five? Here, bhikkhus, the teacher or a fellow monk in the position of a teacher teaches the Dhamma to a bhikkhu. In whatever way the teacher or that fellow monk in the position of a teacher teaches the Dhamma to the bhikkhu, in just that way he experiences inspiration in the meaning and inspiration in the Dhamma. As he does so, joy arises in him. When he is joyful, rapture arises. For one with a rapturous mind, the body becomes tranquil. One tranquil in body feels pleasure. For one feeling pleasure, the mind becomes concentrated. This is the first basis of liberation, by means of which, if a bhikkhu dwells heedful, ardent, and resolute, his unliberated mind is liberated. His undestroyed taints are utterly destroyed, and he reaches the as yet unreached, unsurpassed security from bondage. Again, neither the teacher nor a fellow monk in the position of a teacher teaches the Dhamma to a bhikkhu, but he himself teaches the Dhamma to others in detail as he has heard it and learned it. In whatever way the bhikkhu teaches the Dhamma to others in detail as he has heard it and learned it, in just that way, in relation to that Dhamma, he experiences inspiration in the meaning and inspiration in the Dhamma. As he does so, joy arises in him. When he is joyful, rapture arises. For one with a rapturous mind, the body becomes tranquil. One tranquil in body feels pleasure. For one feeling pleasure, the mind becomes concentrated. This is the second basis of liberation by means of which, if a bhikkhu dwells heedful, ardent, and resolute, his unliberated mind is liberated. His undestroyed taints are utterly destroyed, and he reaches the as yet unreached, unsurpassed security from bondage. Again, neither the teacher nor a fellow monk in the position of a teacher teaches the Dhamma to a bhikkhu, nor does he himself teach the Dhamma to others in detail as he has heard it and learned it. But he recites the Dhamma in detail as he has heard it and learned it. In whatever way the bhikkhu recites the Dhamma in detail as he has heard it and learned it, in just that way, in relation to that Dhamma, he experiences inspiration in the meaning and inspiration in the Dhamma. As he does so, joy arises in him. When he is joyful, rapture arises. For one with a rapturous mind, the body becomes tranquil. One tranquil in body feels pleasure. One feeling pleasure, the mind becomes concentrated. This is the third basis of liberation, by means of which, if a bhikkhu dwells heedful, ardent, and resolute, his unliberated mind is liberated, his undestroyed taints are utterly destroyed, and he reaches the as yet unreached, unsurpassed security from bondage. Again, neither the teacher nor a fellow monk in the position of a teacher teaches the Dhamma to a bhikkhu, nor does he teach the Dhamma to others in detail as he has heard it and learned it, nor does he recite the Dhamma in detail as he has heard it and learned it. But he ponders, examines, and mentally inspects the Dhamma as he has heard it and learned it. In whatever way the bhikkhu ponders, examines and mentally inspects the Dhamma as he has heard it and learned it, in just that way, in relation to the Dhamma, he experiences inspiration in the meaning and inspiration in the Dhamma. As he does so, joy arises in him. When he is joyful, rapture arises. For one with a rapturous mind, the body becomes tranquil. One tranquil in body feels pleasure. One feeling pleasure, the mind becomes concentrated. This is the fourth basis of liberation, by means of which, if a bhikkhu dwells heedful, ardent, and resolute, his unliberated mind is liberated, his undestroyed taints are utterly destroyed, and he reaches the as yet unreached, unsurpassed security from bondage. Again, neither the teacher nor a fellow monk in the position of a teacher teaches the Dhamma to a bhikkhu, nor does he teach the Dhamma to others in detail, as he has heard it and learned it. Nor does he recite the Dhamma in detail, as he has heard it and learned it, nor does he ponder, examine, and mentally inspect the Dhamma as he has heard it and learned it, but he has grasped well a certain object of concentration, attended to it well, sustained it well, and penetrated it well with wisdom. In whatever way the bhikkhu has grasped well a certain object of concentration, attended to it well, sustained it well, and penetrated it well with wisdom, in just that way, in relation to that Dhamma, he experiences inspiration in the meaning and inspiration in the Dhamma. As he does so, joy arises in him. When he is joyful, rapture arises. For one with a rapturous mind, the body becomes tranquil. One tranquil in body feels pleasure. For one feeling pleasure, the mind becomes concentrated. This is the fifth basis of liberation, by means of which, if a bhikkhu dwells heedful, ardent, and resolute, his unliberated mind is liberated, his undestroyed taints are utterly destroyed, and he reaches the as yet unreached, unsurpassed security from bondage. These bhikkhus are the five bases of liberation, by means of which, if a bhikkhu dwells heedful, ardent, and resolute, his unliberated mind is liberated, his undestroyed taints are utterly destroyed, and he reaches the as yet unreached, unsurpassed security from bondage. Translated by Bhikkhu Bodhi.
Friends, the Buddha is known as the Awakened One. It is for two special reasons. In the known history to humankind, Buddha is the first human being to be awakened from the deep sleep of ignorance. From that moment of his supreme enlightenment, awakening from the sleep of ignorance, he dedicated entire life to awaken the other human beings from the same deep sleep of ignorance. So the Buddha is known as Awakened One for these two reasons. He's the first to be awakened, and also he awakened the other human beings. Ordinary human mind is covered with dense darkness of ignorance. In order to make the human beings awaken from the sleep of ignorance, the Buddha specifically designed the Noble Eightfold Path. And those who follow the Noble Eightfold Path, when they cultivate the path diligently, they develop their spiritual faculties, and when the right conditioning arises, they will be awakened from the sleep of ignorance. So in this sutta, the Buddha clearly mentioned there are five occasions that these human beings who follow the Noble Eightfold Path will be awakened. Whoever a human being would be awakened, that human being will be awakened in one of these occasions. Even though the sutta directly addresses the monks, this sutta is for everyone who ever wished to be awakened. A follower of the Buddha who dedicates to practice can be awakened from the sleep of ignorance while he is listening to the Dhamma. This is the first occasion. Or a follower of the Buddha who dedicated to the practice can be awakened from the sleep of ignorance while he is teaching the Dhamma to others. This is the second occasion. Or a follower of the Buddha can be awakened from the sleep of ignorance while he is chanting, reciting the Dhamma. This is the third occasion. Or a follower of the Buddha can be awakened from the sleep of ignorance while he is systematically analyzing, scrutinizing, and pondering the Dhamma. This is the fourth occasion. Or a follower of the Buddha can be awakened from the sleep of ignorance while he is meditating. So friends, these are the five occasions. While listening to the Dhamma, while teaching the Dhamma, while chanting the Dhamma, while reflecting the Dhamma, or while meditating, the person can be awakened. But there should be necessary conditioning. Now, let's go through the sutta. I will explain the most important parts. And while we are going through the discourse, this point will be clearer. However, among the many conditions which are required for awakening, there are two conditions which are unique, which cannot be dismissed. These two conditions are the insight and concentration. Both insight and concentration are produced in this particular case through Dhamma analyzing, through inspiration. So this will be clearer when we go through the discourse. At the very beginning of the discourse, the Buddha said these words: if a bhikkhu dwells heedful, ardent, and resolute, his unliberated mind is liberated, his undestroyed taints are utterly destroyed, and he reached the as yet unreached, unsurpassed security from bondage. This paragraph has been repeated throughout the sutta for 7 times. Why it has been repeated for 7 times is because this is the important message that the Buddha Buddha wanted to emphasize for those who practice the path. When we analyze this paragraph, there are three important aspects to it. The first of it is the diligent practice. Second, when you practice diligently, the defilements will be weakened and the necessary conditions are produced. Thirdly, to be awakened. So these are expressed through these words. If a bhikkhu dwells heedful, heedful here means appamada, diligence. He is mindful, diligent with his practice. He doesn't waste his time. As the Buddha pointed out, appamado amata padang. Diligence is the path to deathlessness. Pamado machuno padang. Those who are not diligent, they will repeatedly be born and repeatedly die. So here, the diligence is the key point. It means every single second is counted. Diligence. The third important word, not only diligent, he is ardent, means fully dedicated, 100% dedicated to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path. And there is no any other important aspect in his or her life other than devoting oneself to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path. Thirdly, he is resolute, means he has the goal to attain enlightenment in this life itself. And this goal is very clear. So the person, whether it is a monk, a nun, or a lay Buddhist follower, is diligent and devoted and has the goal of awakening in this life itself, is the one the Buddha is referring here. So when you have these three qualities and dedicate to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path, such a human being is cultivating the five spiritual faculties: faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. These are the five spiritual faculties. They will become mature, they will grow and come into fulfillment as we follow the Noble Eightfold Path. So a person who dedicates oneself to follow the Noble Eightfold Path is also cultivating these five spiritual faculties. So when these five spiritual faculties are matured, and when he come across these five conditions, it means while he was listening to the Dhamma, or teaching the Dhamma, or reciting the Dhamma, or reflecting the Dhamma, or meditating, at any moment, awakening can happen. And the other important part of this paragraph is, so while he was cultivating in this way, his unliberated mind is liberated, his undestroyed taints are utterly destroyed, and he reaches the as yet unreached, unsurpassed security from bondage. Means, while he was cultivating in this way, at the moment of his awakening, his defilements, greed, hatred, delusion, and all the other defilements can be uprooted perfectly, permanently, and irreversibly. And the moment of that awakening, he is completely free from the bond of suffering, and he is awakened to the supreme enlightenment. However, even though here the Buddha is referring ultimate attainment of enlightenment, this also can be interpreted as first awakening to the first stage of awakening, the Sotapanna or any other status. This paragraph has been repeated for 7 times. It is because the Buddha wanted to emphasize the awakening will happen only if you are dedicated. Now there are these five occasions for awakening. First occasion is when someone is listening to the Dhamma. What will happen when you listen to the Dhamma? Here, listening does not mean simply listening, but listening here means listen with 100% attention, with undivided attention, with perfect mindfulness. So some people have the habits of listening to the Dhamma while driving. When you listen to the Dhamma, you will not have the right condition. You will not have undivided attention. In fact, sometimes it can be very dangerous. While driving, you must pay 100% attention to driving, not to the Dhamma talk. So it is not the right time. That is what the Buddha mean. Kalena Dhamma Savanang, when the right time comes, listen to the Dhamma. Kalena Dhamma Sakaccha, when the right time comes, engage in Dhamma discussion. So some people have the habits of asking Dhamma questions, especially when they come to fetch us to some other places to give a talk. On the way, they keep on asking Dhamma questions. But that's not the right time, because it is wasting of one's time. So if you want to understand the Dhamma, and you need to have undivided attention. Some people have the habit of listening to the Dhamma while cooking, while washing, while doing other works, multitasking. You don't have right conditions. You will never understand the Dhamma and realize it. I should not say never, because there can be exceptional cases. However, that's not the right time. And some people, they go to Dhamma talks with the intention of listening to the jokes. And in such an occasion also, you will not have right condition, because your purpose of going to listen to a Dhamma talk is entertainment. You just want to hear the stories and jokes and just to gratify your sensual pleasure. So the right way to listen to the Dhamma is you need to have 100% attention, you need to be secluded, you need to be prepared for it, and listen to the Dhamma. So this is called deep listening with mindfulness. And when you listen to the Dhamma with mindfulness, with 100% attention, with undivided attention, then these two things can happen. What are these two things? And he experiences inspiration in the meaning and inspiration in the Dhamma. So these two things can be achieved only if you were to listen with mindfulness. So what is the inspiration in the meaning? Here it means that when you listen to the Dhamma, you will realize its deep, profound meaning. And the moment you realize this meaning, you become inspired. And at the same time, you will have inspiration in the Dhamma itself. It means, with understanding of the meaning, you also will see the goal of the Dhamma, the truth, the Four Noble Truths. You will see it. So the moment of realizing the deep meaning and the moment of direct seeing of the Four Noble Truths, the inspiration arises in your mind. So the moment the inspiration arises through this Dhamma understanding, then a kind of inner transformation occurs. This inner transformation is creating a necessary conditioning for awakening to happen. So what are these necessary conditioning? When the inspiration arises, he feels joy, pamoccha, So Dhamma listening can make us so joyful. The moment the mind becomes joyful, and it will accelerate the joy to a higher state, which is called piti, rapture. It's more sublime state of the mind. And then when someone is joyful and then have rapture, the body become tranquil, pasaddi. When the body become tranquil with the joy and rapture in the mind, and then that person experience something called sukha. The physical easiness or pleasure in the body. And person who feels sukha or pleasure in the body, and the joy and rapture together create the concentration. So here, if you were to look at very carefully, what will happen? The five aggregates of clinging, and these five all together achieve a kind of concentration which has got joy, rapture, tranquility, and one-pointedness. So what are these qualities? These are the jhanic factors. These are the factors that we produce through developing samadhi. However, when Buddha talks about these status here, these are kind of concentrations which are fluid, which are mobile, which are momentary kind of concentration. It does not mean momentary means it is not strong. It's quite strong. It's strong enough for awakening. And it is produced through insight. And all this is possible only if you were to listen to the Dhamma with 100% attention. And then only inspiration in the Dhamma and inspiration in the meaning arise, leading the way to joy, leading the way to rapture, leading the way to tranquility of the body and to the pleasure of the body, and eventually create the concentration for awakening. So friends, when you listen to the Dhamma, train yourself to listen with 100% attention. And if you were to train in that way, you will be greatly benefited from any Dhamma talk that you listen. And don't try to listen to the Dhamma talks while multitasking. That is not going to be fruitful because it doesn't create necessary conditioning. Second condition is when you are teaching the Dhamma. So when someone starts to teach the Dhamma in such occasions, for example, that person has to deeply analyze the Dhamma one's own mind before teaching. And when you start teaching the Dhamma, your mind is calm, serene, peaceful, and you have undivided attention. And then when you teach the Dhamma in detail, and when you are explaining the Dhamma step by step, and when you are explaining the sequence of the Dhamma, and out of great compassion for the others, without expecting any material gain. And then, at that moment of this conditioning, it creates the inspiration in the meaning, inspiration in the Dhamma, because the moment you start teaching, you understand its deeper meaning and its goal. So joy can arise, and then joy can lead to rapture, and then it will lead to tranquility of the body. Then pleasure arises in body, and with this conditioning of the body and mind, concentration arises for awakening. This is the second occasion. Thirdly, someone can be awakened while he or she is engaged in chanting. Now a word should be said here. Many people belittle chanting. Many people think chanting is an old passion and chanting is only for old people, not for young people. But that's not true. And if you notice this sutta itself, chanting is a form of meditation itself that leads to necessary concentration. However, something must be emphasized here. It is no point of chanting like a parrot. If you do not know the meaning of what you are chanting, it doesn't create necessary conditions for awakening. So chanting can be effective only if you know the meaning of the words that you are chanting. Chanting can be effective only if you know the meaning of the Dhamma, and then inspiration arises by knowing its meaning and the goal. So what we would like to encourage you, when you chant in Pali, you also must read in English. So after chanting Pali, you can mindfully recite in English, or you can simply do away with chanting and you can read in English with mindfulness. If you find it is difficult to chant in Pali, that's fine. All these suttas have been translated into English, so you can mindfully read the suttas rhythmically, creating a kind of peace, kind of joy, kind of concentration environment which are necessary for awakening. So when you understand the meaning of the Dhamma and the goal of the Dhamma, and then through these inspirations, joy, rapture, tranquility and the concentration can arise which are necessary for awakening. So this is the third occasion. The fourth occasion is deep reflection. This can be done again by anyone, as long as you grasp the basic Dhamma, and then you can sit somewhere and close your eyes and analyze the Dhamma. For example, suppose five aggregates of clinging. You can sit somewhere, close your eyes and pay your attention to your own body and mind, and try to understand the five aggregates of clinging, how the mind-body complex work. And when you deeply reflect their nature, their arising and passing away of the five aggregates, that creates inspiration of knowing the Dhamma and seeing the Dhamma, and then it leads to joy, rapture, tranquility, and the concentration. Or you can simply sit somewhere and then reflect a sutta. After reading a sutta, you can sit somewhere and deeply analyze this discourse. You may be able to reflect about the Four Noble Truths. So any kind of these teachings will be greatly beneficial. So this is called Dhamma Vichaya, analyzing the Dhamma. The fifth stage, of course, the meditation. So a monk or a nun or a layperson who is into Dhamma practice, who is diligent, who is ardent, and who is resolute and cultivating the Noble Eightfold Path, the moment he sits for a meditation subject, and then at that moment when his mind achieves the concentration on based on this meditation object, at that moment, by seeing the impermanent, changing, unsatisfactory soullessness of the object itself, the insight arises, inspiration arises, together with the inspiration of realizing the Dhamma, seeing the Dhamma, joy will arise, rapture will arise, body become calm, tranquil, and it will create necessary conditioning for the breakthrough. So that is how someone will break through the delusion while meditating. So these five stages, or these, not stages, five occasions are to be considered as a turning point, awakening point. But as I said at the very beginning, this particular concentration that we are talking about here is a kind of concentration which produces through the Dhamma learning, Dhamma analyzing, and realizing the Dhamma, which is possible for all of us to do here and now. Some people find it is so difficult to meditate, but there are other ways as well you can develop your mind. So all these five can be included into the term bhavana. The Pali term for meditation is bhavana. But the term bhavana does not convey the real meaning of it. When we say meditation, we come to understand a kind of sitting posture and developing concentration. But the term bhavana has got a broader meaning. Bhavana means cultivating the mind. So the mind can be cultivated in many ways. So these are the five ways here, again, that mind can be cultivated. So when we cultivate the mind in this way, through insight and concentration, necessary conditions are created for awakening. Okay, I think this is enough as a sutta elaboration. But if you have got any questions, we can open this for Q&A.